You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Mr. Cooper, are there larger numbers of people all the time who are receptive to your message and who are thinking a little bit more deeply and critically about these fundamental issues of government and politics that perhaps they did not give as much thought to in the past?
Oh, yes. In fact, I never dreamed that I would make such an impact. When I first began what I'm doing now, which was many years ago, I was lucky if I could travel 1,000 miles and collect 3 people in somebody's living room, none of whom, by the way, would help me pay for expenses or anything else, to sit down and listen to what I had to say. And I did this many times, travel all the way across the country just to talk to 2 or 3 or 4 people in somebody's home. And put all the expenses myself. And now I can go to some place like the Salt Dome in Salt Lake City and fill the place up with people who want to come and hear what I have to say. And I think the radio broadcast has had a lot to do with it. My book has certainly been the number one underground book in the country for the last 8 or 9 years, and continues to be today. And I know that I'm really hitting the mark, and I'm really making people pay attention when the President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, names me in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, as being the most dangerous radio host in America. To me, that was the most tremendous compliment that I could ever receive. It was worth more than $50 million in my estimation, and if I don't ever do anything more than what I've accomplished, I certainly have accomplished quite a bit in the way of waking up the average American to stop believing everything that he's told or taught and start questioning and using his own mind for something other than to hold up the top of his head. And I think that's happening. I think people are beginning to question and think and arrive at their own conclusions today a lot more than they ever have in history. Trusting people is what got us in this situation. And the concept, the whole concept that imperfect man can rule other imperfect men and it's going to turn out all right, is the most ludicrous proposition that I've ever heard in my life.
I think there are a number of people that agree with what you say who are aware of some of these facts. Again, the question to ask is, given that there may be ills and abuses on the part of the government today, what would be something that a person interested in seeing change could do? What sort of advice would you give somebody who wanted to have an effect for the better, who would want to influence events so that we would begin moving towards a change?
There are only 2 possible avenues of change at the present time. One is civil war, which we are heading toward right now. We are rushing toward a civil war in this country. And I foresee that is probably the most reasonable expectation that we can see happening. Not that I want it to happen. Not that a civil war is reasonable. But it's the reasonable conclusion after looking at the whole picture. The other is that we could somehow really educate the vast majority of what I call the American sheeple. These are people who are ignorant. Ignorant is not a bad word. It just means that they're without knowledge. If we could educate them and get them to understand that it is more important to stand up now and take a personal risk and educate other people and say that this has all got to stop and be able to select our own candidates and make sure they get elected, no matter what the press or the television or anybody else tells us about them. Put them in office, people who will support, protect, and defend the Constitution, like the liars and the charlatans who are in office now swear to do when they take their oath of office, but don't at all. Don't even attempt it, in fact. If you could get the people to do that, then there might be a possibility of a political, peaceful solution. But I can tell you right there that that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in your wildest dreams, because most people spend the first 21 years of their life trying to get away from daddy and get away from home and become responsible and have their own responsibility in life. They spend the rest of their life, once they find out what that really means, in trying to find a daddy that will take care of them and take all the risk away from them and make sure that they have a job and that their diapers are changed and they have a bed to sleep in at night and a place to play and all of that kind of stuff, just like every other child in the world. And to stand up and be responsible and take a risk means that they're not going to find that. That's why socialism is so attractive to the vast majority of any people, not just Americans, but any people. It promises that they're going to have a daddy again who's going to take care of them. If they'll just give up all their rights and all their liberties, daddy will take care of them. And so that's what people are looking for. And you can see it in your daily life. That's the way they vote. That's what they want. They don't want to take personal responsibility. They don't want to take a risk. They're afraid of getting on a list. I've had people tell me to my face, Bill, I know all about this stuff, but I can't help you because I don't want to get on anybody's list.
Is it different anywhere else then, Bill? Because this question brings me to something I wanted to ask you anyway, and that is, in looking over other countries in the world, do you find any other countries with social or political models, even if it's only some aspect of their system, that you find worth emulating in other countries? Any other country or countries that you think go about the political process or the social contract, if you will, in a way superior to the United States?
No, I don't, as a matter of fact. Up until we began to take this left turn into socialism, the United States was the great light of the world, so to speak. We were the only free people who had ever existed in the entire history of humanity. We like to talk about our great heritage from England. The English were never free. They're not free today. They don't have freedom of speech. They don't have any of the freedoms that we've always had and cherished. In the history of the whole human race, the only people that have ever lived on this planet who have ever truly been free, the ultimate achievement of all humankind was to accept the individual as a king or queen in his or her own right, being responsible and having all of the freedom and liberties that they could possibly imagine right here in this country. And we created a government that was supposed to have a balance of power and was limited, strictly limited by the Constitution, and only given a very few powers in order to protect the freedom of the common man. That's all gone now. I mean, that's like you hear these politicians in Washington today talking about how the Constitution is an outdated document penned over 200 years ago by a bunch of doddering old men who did not understand the complexities of the modern age. They won't tell you what you should already know, is that the document is not an outdated old document. It is a living Constitution. It has within it the means for change should the people desire that it be changed. But the people don't desire that, so they just go ahead and throw it in the trash can anyway and go about their business doing anything that they want to do, while Joe Blow on the street doesn't even know that it's happening because he's never read the document that guarantees his freedom in his whole life.
So, Mr. Cooper, given the controversial nature of so many of the things that you have studied with regard to government and the law and the abuses thereof, tell us a little bit about how it has affected your personal life. You're a family man with two children. What kind of impact has the work you've done had on your family?
Well, that's quite an interesting question that doesn't get asked very much, but it's had a tremendous effect. If you want to find out how quickly society can turn against one, and I'm talking seriously here, stand up and tell the truth about just anything that you want to stand up and tell the truth about. It scares the living daylights out of everyone. And so the first thing that happens is you find out who your friends are and who your friends are not, because there's a great weeding out there. And it's not anything that you do on your part or that I've done on my part. They just disappear. And you find very quickly that people are afraid to be around you because that they can see the government being upset about what you're talking about, and they can see repercussions coming, and of course they have happened and will continue to happen. And ultimately, I really believe that there will be some kind of a terminal point where they decide that they're not just not going to put up with this pest anymore, and that's going to be the end of me. We have been literally financially in the ditch. We have found it impossible to get any kind of a normal job with anyone who knows anything about what I do. It's you can't go to church, you can't go to cocktail parties because everybody else is sitting around talking about the weather or, oh, what school did you go to? And when you have done the research and arrived at some of the answers that I know to be true now, those people become like kindergarten children. They're not in the real world, and I can't engage in that kind of a conversation. So you really find yourself in another world that has nothing to do with all of the rest of the people who are running around engaged in their activities that they think are so important then. And to them, they really are. But to me, they've lost the reality of what really is important, and they're about to lose their freedom to even discover those things at this point.
May I ask you a last question, and that is, how would you like to be seen or remembered in future years when people look back and you think about the thrust of your work? What is it that you would like to be best remembered for?
I think I would like to be remembered like Paul Revere was remembered. At a time when it was needed and nobody else would do it, I got on my horse and rode through the night and said, the British are coming. And this time it's not the British, although there's an element of the British here, because England is a socialist country. I'm sure you know that. That's all. I'm not looking for any fame or any fortune. You certainly don't get rich doing what I'm doing. And infamous is probably the real word that describes what happens to you as far as public recognition in a world where political correctness is the theme of the day. You just don't do what I'm doing. So if anybody wants to remember me, I would certainly be pleased if they just remembered I did what was the responsible and the right thing to do at a time when nobody else had the guts to do it.
Well, Cooper, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat upon him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with sword, and with hunger, and with the beasts of the earth. Book of Revelation, chapter 6, verse 8. There have been many related sequential coincidences all throughout my life, incidents that by themselves would have led nowhere. Statistically, the odds against the same are a related sequence of events happening to one individual are astronomically high. It is this series of incidents that have convinced me that God has had a hand in my life. I do not believe in fate. I do not believe in accidents. I cannot and will not accept the theory that long sequences of unrelated accidents determine world events. It is inconceivable that those with power and wealth would not band together with a common bond, a common interest, and a long-range plan to decide and direct the future of the world. For those with the resources to do otherwise would be totally irresponsible. I know that I would be the first to organize a conspiracy to control the outcome of the future if I were such a person and a conspiracy did not yet exist. I would do it in an attempt to ensure the survival of the principles in which I believe, the survival of my family, my survival, and the survival of the human race, if for no other reason. I believe, therefore, that a grand game of chess is being played on a level that we can barely imagine, and we are the pawns. Pawns are valuable only under certain circumstances, and are frequently sacrificed to gain an advantage. Anyone who has studied military strategy is familiar with the concept of sacrifice. Those who have seriously studied history have probably discovered the real reason we go to war on a regularly scheduled basis. My research has shown, at this point, that the future laid out for us may be just about impossible to change. I do not agree with the means by which the powerful few have chosen for us to reach the end. I do not agree that the end is where we should end at all. But unless we can wake the people from their sleep, nothing short of civil war will stop the planned outcome. I base that statement not on defeatism, but on the apathy of the majority of the American people. 25 years ago, I would have believed otherwise. But 25 years ago, I was also sound asleep. We have been taught lies. Reality is not at all what we perceive it to be. We cannot survive any longer by hanging on to the falsehoods of the past. Reality must be discerned at all costs if we are to be a part of the future. Truth must prevail in all instances, no matter who it hurts or helps, if we are to continue to live upon this earth. At this point, what we want may no longer matter. It is what we must do to ensure our survival that counts. The old way is in the certain process of destruction, and a new world order is beating down the door. I fear for the little ones, the innocents, who are already paying for our mistakes. There exists a great army of occupationally orphaned children. They are attending government-controlled daycare centers. There are latchkey kids who are running wild in the streets, and the lopsided, emotionally wounded children of single welfare mothers, born only for the sake of more money in the monthly check. Open your eyes and look at them, for they are the future. In them I see the sure and certain destruction of this once proud nation. In their vacant eyes, I see the death of freedom. They carry with them a great emptiness, and someone will surely pay a great price for their suffering. If we do not act in concert with each other and ensure that the future becomes what we need it to be, then we will surely deserve whatever fate awaits us. I believe, with all my heart, that God put me in places and in positions throughout my life so that I would be able to deliver this warning to his people. I pray that I have been worthy and that I have done my job. From the time a person leaves its mother's womb, its every effort is directed toward building, maintaining, and withdrawing into artificial wombs various sorts of substitute protective devices or shells. The objective of these artificial wombs is to provide a stable environment for both stable and unstable activity, to provide a shelter for the evolutionary processes of growth and maturity, in effect, survival, to provide security for freedom, and to provide defensive protection for offensive activity. This is equally true of both the general public and the elite. However, there is a definite difference in the way each of these classes go about the solution of problems. The primary reason why the individual citizens of a country create a political structure is a subconscious wish or desire to perpetuate their own dependency relationship of childhood. Simply put, they want a human god to eliminate all risk from their life, pat them on the head, kiss their bruises, put a chicken on every dinner table, clothe their bodies, tuck them into bed at night, and tell them that everything will be all right when they wake up in the morning. This public demand is incredible, so the human god, the politician, meets incredibility with incredibility by promising the world and delivering nothing. So who is the bigger liar, the public or the godfather? This public behavior is surrender born of fear, laziness, and expediency. It is the basis of the welfare state as a strategic weapon, useful against a disgusting public. Most people want to be able to subdue and or kill other human beings which disturb their daily lives, but they do not want to have to cope with the moral and religious issues which such an overt act on their part might raise. Therefore, they assign the dirty work to others, including their own children, so as to keep the blood off their own hands. They rave about the humane treatment of animals and then sit down to a delicious hamburger from a whitewashed slaughterhouse down the street and out of sight. But even more hypocritical, they pay taxes to finance a professional association of hitmen, collectively called politicians, and then complain about corruption in government. Again, most people want to be free to do things, but they are afraid to fail. The fear of failure is manifested in irresponsibility, and especially in delegating those personal responsibilities to others where success is uncertain or carries possible or created liabilities which the person is not prepared to accept. They want authority, but they will not accept responsibility or liability, so they hire politicians to face reality for them. The people hire the politicians so that the people can, 1, obtain security without managing it, 2, obtain action without thinking about it, 3, inflict theft, injury, and death upon others without having to contemplate either life or death, 4, avoid responsibility for their own intentions, 5, obtain the benefits of reality and science without exerting themselves in the discipline of facing or learning either of these things. They give the politicians the power to create and manage a war machine to, 1, provide for the survival of the nation womb, 2, prevent encroachment of anything upon the nation womb, 3, destroy the enemy who threatens the nation womb, 4, destroy those citizens of their own country who do not conform for the sake of stability of the nation womb. Politicians hold many quasi-military jobs, the lowest being the police, which are soldiers, the attorneys and the CPAs next, who are spies and saboteurs, and the judges who shout the orders and run the closed union military shop for whatever the market will bear. The generals are industrialists. The presidential level of commander-in-chief is shared by the international bankers. The people know that they have created this farce and financed it with their own taxes, but they would rather knuckle under than be the hypocrite. Thus, a nation becomes divided into two very distinct parts,
a docile subnation and a political subnation. The political subnation remains attached to the docile subnation, tolerates it, and leeches its substance until it grows strong enough to detach itself and then devour its parent. Human beings are machines, levers which may be grasped and turned, and there is little real difference between automating a society and automating a shoe factory. Factor 1. As in every social system approach, stability is achieved only by understanding and accounting for human nature. A failure to do so can be, and usually is, disastrous. As in other human social schemes, one form or another of intimidation, or incentive, is essential to the success of the draft. Physical principles of action and reaction must be applied to both internal and external subsystems. To secure the draft, individual brainwashing, programming, and both the family unit and the peer group must be engaged and brought under control. Factor 2. Father. The man of the household must be housebroken to ensure that Junior will grow up with the right social training and attitudes. The advertising media, etc., are engaged to see to it that father-to-be is compliant before or by the time he is married. He is taught that he either conforms to the social notch cut out for him, or his sex life will be hobbled, and his tender companionship will be zero. He is made to see that women demand security more than logical, principled, or honorable behavior. By the time his son must go to war, father, with jelly for a backbone, will slam a gun into Junior's hand before father will risk the censure of his peers or make a hypocrite of himself by crossing the investment he has in his own personal opinion or self-esteem. Junior will go to war. Our father will be embarrassed. So Junior will go to war, the true purpose notwithstanding. Factor 3. Mother. The female element of human society is ruled by emotion first and logic second. In the battle between logic and imagination, imagination always wins. Fantasy prevails. Maternal instinct dominates, so that the child comes first and the future comes second. A woman with a newborn baby is too starry-eyed to see a wealthy man's cannon fodder or a cheap source of slave labor. A woman must, however, be conditioned to accept the transition to reality when it comes or sooner. As the transition becomes more difficult to manage, the family unit must be carefully disintegrated, and state-controlled public education and state-operated child care centers must become more common and legally enforced so as to begin the detachment of the child from the mother and father at an earlier age. Inoculation of behavioral drugs can speed the transition for the child. Factor 4. Junior. The emotional pressure for self-preservation during the time of war and the self-serving attitude of the common herd that have an option to avoid the battlefield is all of the pressure finally necessary to propel Johnny off to war. Their quiet blackmailings of him are the threats. No sacrifice, no friends, no glory, no girlfriend. Factor 5. Sister. And what about Junior's sister? She is given all the good things of life by her father and taught to expect the same from her future husband, regardless of the price. Factor 6. Cattle. Those who will not use their brains are no better off than those who have no brains. And so this mindless school of jellyfish, father, mother, son, and daughter, become useful beasts of burden, are trainers of the same. So now you know. You can see every step that the elite have taken in their war to control this once great nation. You can see the steps that will be taken in the future. You can no longer pretend innocence. Your denial of the conspiracy will fall on deaf ears.
This tape is part of the education that will give Americans the weapons needed in the coming months and years of hardship as the New World Order struggles to be born. Truths cannot be negated or shrugged away. The message is this. You must accept that you have been cattle, and the ultimate consequence of being cattle, which is slavery. Or you must prepare to fight, and if necessary, die to preserve your God-given right to freedom. History is replete with whispers of secret societies, accounts of elders or priests who guarded the forbidden knowledge of ancient people, prominent men meeting in secret who directed the course of civilization are recorded in the writings of all people. The oldest is the Brotherhood of the Snake, also called the Brotherhood of the Dragon, and it still exists under many different names. The Brotherhood of the Snake is devoted to guarding the secrets of the ages and to the recognition of Lucifer as the one and only true God. If you do not believe in God, Lucifer, or Satan, you must understand that there are great masses of people who do. I do not believe in racism, but millions do, and their beliefs and actions based upon those beliefs will affect me. It is clear that religion has always played a significant role in the course of these organizations. Communication with a higher source, often divine, is a familiar claim in all but a few. The secrets of these groups are thought to be so profound that only a chosen, well-educated few are able to understand and use them. These men use their special knowledge for the benefit of all mankind. At least, that is what they claim. But how are we to know, since their knowledge and actions have been secret? Fortunately, some of it has become public knowledge. Secret societies mirror many facets of ordinary life. There is always an exclusivity of membership, with the resultant importance attached to being or becoming a member. This is found in all human endeavors, even those which are not secret, such as football teams or country clubs. This exclusivity of membership is actually one of the secret society's most powerful weapons. There is the use of signs, passwords, and other tools. These have always performed valuable functions in man's organizations everywhere. The stated reason, almost always different from the real reason, for the society's existence is important. It can be anything, but is usually fraternal and is found in all pressure groups wherever people congregate. The most potent tool of any secret society is the ritual and myth surrounding initiation. These special binding ceremonies have very deep meaning for the participants. Initiation performs several functions which make up the heart and soul of any true secret society. Like boot camp, the initiation into the armed forces, important aspects of human thought that are universally compelling are merged to train and maintain the efforts of a group of people to operate in a certain direction. Initiation bonds the members together in mysticism. Neophytes gain knowledge of a secret, giving them special status. The ancient meaning of neophyte is planted anew or reborn. A higher initiation is, in reality, a promotion inspiring loyalty and the desire to move up to the next rung. The goals of the society are reinforced, causing the initiated to act toward those goals in everyday life. That brings about a change in the political and social action of the member. The change is always in the best interest of the goals of the leaders of the secret society. The leaders are called adepts. This can best be illustrated by the soldier trained to follow orders without thinking. The result is often the wounding or death of the soldier for the realization of the commander's goal, which may or may not be good for the overall community. Initiation is a means of rewarding ambitious men who can be trusted. You will notice that the higher the degree of initiation, the fewer the members who possess the degree. This is not because the other members are not ambitious, but because a process of very careful selection is being conducted. A point is reached where no effort is good enough without a pull up by the higher members. Most members never proceed beyond this point and never learn the real secret purpose of the group. The frozen member from that point on serves only as a part of the political power base, as indeed he has always done. You may have guessed by now that initiation is a way to determine who can and cannot be trusted. A method of deciding exactly who is to become an adept may be decided during initiation by asking the candidate to spit upon the Christian cross. If the candidate refuses, the members congratulate him and tell him, "You have made the right choice, as a true adept would never do such a terrible thing." The newly initiated might find it disconcerting, however, that he or she never advances any higher. If instead the candidate spits upon the cross, he or she has demonstrated a knowledge of one of the mysteries and soon will find him or herself a candidate for the next higher level. The mystery is that religion is but a tool to control the masses. Knowledge or wisdom is their only God, through which man himself will become God. Man's desire to be one of the elect is something that no power on earth has been able to lessen, let alone destroy. It is one of the secrets of secret societies. It is what gives them a political base and lots of clout. Members often vote the same and give each other preference in daily business, legal, and social activities. It is the deepest desire of many to be able to say, "I belong to the elect." The first secret that one must know to even begin to understand the mysteries is that their members believe that there are but few truly mature minds in the world. They believe that those minds belong exclusively to them. The philosophy that follows is the classic secret society view of humanity. When a person of strong intellect is confronted with a problem which calls for the use of reasoning faculties, they keep their poise and attempt to reach a solution by garnering facts bearing upon the question. On the other hand, those who are immature when confronted by the same problem are overwhelmed. While the former may be said to be qualified to solve the mystery of their own destiny, the latter must be led like a bunch of animals and taught in the simplest language. Like sheep, they are totally dependent upon the shepherd. The able intellect is taught the mysteries and the esoteric spiritual truths. The masses are taught the literal, exoteric interpretations. While the masses worship the five senses, the select few observe, recognizing in the gulf between them the symbolic concretions of great abstract truths. The elect are given knowledge of the mysteries and are illumined, and are thus known as the Illuminati, or the Illuminated Ones, the guardians of the secrets of the ages. Three early secret societies that can be directly connected to a modern descendant are the cults of Roshaniya, Mithras, and their counterpart, the Builders. They have many things in common with the Freemasons of today, as well as with many other branches of the Illuminati. For instance, common to the Brotherhood are the symbolic rebirth into a new life without going through the portal of death during initiation, reference to the lion, and the grip of the lion's paw in the Master Mason's degree. The three degrees, which is the same as the ancient Masonic rites before the many other degrees were added, the ladder of seven rungs, men only, and the all-seeing eye. Of special interest is the powerful society in Afghanistan in ancient times called the Roshaniya, Illuminated One. There are actually references to this mystical cult going back through history to the House of Wisdom at Cairo. The major tenets of this cult were the abolition of private property,
the elimination of religion, the elimination of nation states, the belief that illumination emanated from the supreme being who desired a class of perfect men and women to carry out the organization and direction of the world, belief in a plan to reshape the social system of the world by first taking control of individual countries one by one, and the belief that after reaching the fourth degree, one could communicate directly with the unknown supervisors who had imparted knowledge to initiates throughout the ages. Wise men will again recognize the Brotherhood. Can you hear the echo of the Nazi Party, the Communist Party, the extreme right and the extreme left? The important fact to remember is that the leaders of both the right and the left are a small, hardcore of men who have been and still are Illuminists or members of the Brotherhood. They may have been or may be members of the Christian or Jewish religion, but that is only to further their own ends. They are and always have been Luciferian and internationalist. They give allegiance to no particular nation, although they have used, on occasion, nationalism to further their causes. Their only concern is to gain greater economic and political power. The ultimate objective of the leaders of both groups is identical. They are determined to win for themselves undisputed control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire planet. They intend to turn the world into their conception of a Luciferian totalitarian socialist state. In the process, they will eliminate all Christians, Jews, and atheists. You have just learned one, but only one, of the great mystery. I hope to show that most modern secret societies, and especially those that practice degrees of initiation, and that is the key, are really one society with one purpose. You may call them whatever you wish, the Order of the Quest, the Jason Society, the Roshaniya, the Kabbalah, the Knights Templar, the Knights of Malta, the Knights of Columbus, the Jesuits, the Masons, the Ancient and Mystical Order of Rosicrucii, the Illuminati, the Nazi Party, the Communist Party, the executive members of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Group, the Brotherhood of the Dragon, the Rosicrucians, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Open Friendly Secret Society of the Vatican, the Russell Trust, the Skull and Bone, the Scroll and Key, the Order. They are all the same, and all work toward the same ultimate goal, a new world order. Many of them, however, disagree on exactly who will rule this new world order, and that is what causes them to sometimes pull in opposite directions while nevertheless proceeding toward the same goal. The Trilateral Commission is an elite group of some 300 very prominent business, political, and intellectual decision makers of Western Europe, North America, and Japan. This enterprise is a private agency that works to build up political and economic cooperation among the three regions. Its grand design, which it no longer hides, is a new world order. A key to the danger presented by the Trilateral Commission is its seminal piece, written for them by Harvard professor Samuel P. Huntington in the mid-70s. In the paper, Professor Huntington recommended that democracy and economic development be discarded as outdated ideas. He wrote the following as co-author of the book Crises in Democracy. We have come to recognize that there are potential desirable limits to economic growth. There are also potentially desirable limits to the indefinite extension of political democracy. A government which lacks authority will have little ability short of cataclysmic crises to impose on its people the sacrifices which may be necessary. Look at the Council on Foreign Relations. Many members, in fact the majority, never serve on the executive committees, They never go through any initiation of any kind. They are, in fact, the power base, and are used to gain a consensus of opinion. The majority are not really members, but are made to feel as if they are. In reality, they are being used and are unwilling or unable to understand. The executive committee is an inner core of intimate associates, members of a secret society called the Order of the Quest, also known as the Jason Society, devoted to a common purpose. The members are an outer circle on whom the inner core acts by personal persuasion, patronage, and social pressure. That is how they bought Henry Kissinger. Rockefeller gave Kissinger a grant of $50,000 in the early 50s, a fortune in those days, and made dear old Henry a member of the CFR. Anyone in the outer circle who does not toe the mark is summarily expelled, and the lesson is not lost on those who remain. Do you remember the human desire to be a member of the elect? That is the principle at work. The Council on Foreign Relations has been the foremost plank of America's foreign policy establishment for more than half a century. The Council on Foreign Relations is a private organization of business executives, scholars, and political leaders that studies global problems and plays a key role in developing United States foreign policy. The CFR is one of the most powerful semi-official groups concerned with America's role in international affairs. It is controlled by an elect group of men recruited from the Skull and Bones and the Sproul and Key societies of Harvard and Yale, which are both chapters of a secret branch of the Illuminati known as Chapter 322 of the Order. The members of the Order make up the Executive Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations after undergoing initiation into the Order of the Quest, also known as the Jason Society. The Council on Foreign Relations is an offshoot sister organization to the British Royal Institute of International Affairs. Their goal is a new world order. Although it existed as a dinner club in New York, it did not take on its present power until 1921, when it merged with the Royal Institute of International Affairs and received its financial base from J.P. Morgan, the Carnegie Endowment, the Rockefeller family, and other Wall Street banking interests. The Council on Foreign Relations controls our government. Through the years, its members have infiltrated the entire executive branch, State Department, Justice Department, Central Intelligence Agency, and the top ranks of the military. Every director of the Central Intelligence Agency has been a member of the CFR. Most presidents since Roosevelt have been members. The members of the CFR dominate ownership of the press, and most, if not all, of America's top journalists are members. The CFR does not conform to government policy. The government conforms to CFR policy. I read top secret documents while with Naval Intelligence that stated that President Eisenhower had appointed six of the executive committee members of the CFR to sit on the panel called Majesty 12, also known as Majority 12, for security reasons. Majesty 12 is the secret group that is supposed to control extraterrestrial information and projects. The document stated that Eisenhower had also appointed six members from the executive branch of government who were also members of the CFR. The total membership of Majesty 12 was 19, including Dr. Edward Teller and the six members from the Jason Scientific Group. Again, whether this is true or disinformation depends solely upon the existence of aliens. The CFR is a secret society in that it forbids the taking of notes or the publishing of minutes of its meetings. Any member who divulges the subject or any part of any conversation or talk that took place during a meeting is terminated. The goal of the Council on Foreign Relations is a new world order. Remember, never worship a leader. If you worship a leader, you then no longer have the ability to recognize when you have been deceived. The most powerful secret organization in the world is the Bilderberg Group, organized in 1952 and named after the hotel where its first meeting took place in 1954. The man who organized the Bilderberg Group, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, has the power to veto the Vatican's choice of any pope it selects. Prince Bernhard has this veto power because his family, the Habsburgs, are descended from the Roman emperors. Prince Bernhard is the leader of the Black Families. He claims descent from the House of David and thus can truly say that he is related to Jesus. Prince Bernhard, with the help of the CIA, brought the hidden ruling body of the Illuminati into public knowledge as the Bilderberg Group. This is the official alliance that makes up the world governing body. The core of the organization is three committees made up of 13 members each. Thus, the heart of the Bilderberg Group consists of 39 total members of the Illuminati. The three committees are made up exclusively of members of all the different secret groups that make up the Illuminati, the Freemasons, the Vatican, and the Black Nobility. This committee works year-round in offices in Switzerland. It determines who is invited to the annual meeting and what policies and plans will be discussed.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. Ladies and gentlemen, the broadcast that you just heard is the first 45 minutes of the audio book, Behold a Pale Horse, by yours truly, William Cooper, read also by yours truly, William Cooper, under the alternative audio label, which is a sublabel of audio literature. The entire book is 3 hours in length. That is the audio version. You only heard the first 45 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. That's all you're ever going to hear. If you want to hear the rest of this book, you're going to have to purchase it. You see, we have to pay for airtime. And that's one of the methods whereby you can contribute to making sure that this broadcast remains on the air. The name of the book is Behold a Pale Horse. It is the audio alternative audio label, 3 hours on cassette tape. And as you have just learned, it is not only extremely interesting, but very informative. You can obtain a copy of Behold a Pale Horse on audio tape by sending $19.95. That's $19.95 to the hour of the time. We only accept blank money orders, cash, gold, or silver coin. We only accept, and I'm saying this again because we still get people who send us money orders filled in, and we just simply do not accept them. We send them right back to you. So that if you don't want to waste your time and ours, don't do it. We also have some people who send us money orders with the receipt still attached. Ladies and gentlemen, we want you to keep the receipt so that if there's any problem, we can find out who cashed it and where and when. You see, it's all on record. And it's absolutely impossible for anyone to cash a money order without being found out who did it. So please keep your receipt. Do not send your receipt to us, but do send us the blank actual first copy money order anytime you purchase anything from us, or cash or gold or silver coin. $19.95 for the alternative audio book, Behold a Pale Horse. It was not made by us, ladies and gentlemen. It was made by the alternative audio label of audio literature. In fact, as you travel around the country, you're going to see this in truck stops and stores and all over the country, and bookstores too. We would like for you to order it directly from us. $19.95, blank money order, cash, gold, or silver coin only. Send it to the hour of the time in care of 98.5 FM. That's 98.5 FM, Post Office Box 940. That's P.O. Box 940. Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R. Arizona, 85925. Here's the address once again. The hour of the time, in care of 98.5 FM, Post Office Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925, USA. The way that girl sings. Absolutely incredible. And she's only about 15 years old. Her name is Leanne Rimes. And I know that a lot of you have been wondering exactly who it was that opened the broadcast tonight and closed off the first hour. Leanne Rimes. She's about 15 years old, I believe. Just a very young girl. And so we have a lot of good music that we can expect coming from her. The phones are open, 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. We'll be taking your calls for the rest of the hour. That is, if you can hear us under the voice of propaganda, who calls themselves the Voice of America, 520-333-4578. The phones are open. And we'll talk about whatever's on your mind. What's happening in your part of the world? Have you heard lately what's been going on the Art Bell Show? Art's doing it again. Old B.S. Bell is doing it again. Along with Lost Face Hoagland. He did. He lost his face, folks. He lost his face on Mars. The recent photographs sent back by the Mars mission have revealed that there is no face on Mars. It is merely a plateau that some very enterprising people computer enhanced in order that they might make it look like a face. John Brandenburg was one of those people, amongst many others. And now, old Art Bell and old Art B.S. Bell and Lost Face Hoagland have teamed up to perpetrate another hoax against the people of the world. This time they're claiming that there is an alien starship on the way to the Earth. Boy, doesn't this sound just like the Comet Hale-Bopp fiasco that resulted in a whole bunch of suicides in San Diego? Art B.S. Bell, you have no shame. You have no sense of responsibility. In fact, you're just about the most vilest radio personality I can think of. How dare you pull off another one of these ridiculous stories on the poor sheeple out there who believe what you say? And why in the world would anybody listen to Richard Lostface Hoagland after it's been proven that everything he's been saying about the cities on Mars and the face on Mars and the lost civilization on Mars is just a big bucket of BS? How can you do this, ladies and gentlemen? Are you really the cattle that the Illuminati claim that you are? How does this happen? An alien starship is on the way from EQ Pegasi. Let me repeat that. According to Art Bell, Art B.S. Bell, and Richard Lostface Hoagland, an alien starship is on the way here from EQ Pegasi. And it is advertising its approach by sending us a signal from space. And old Art Bell and Art B.S. Bell and Richard Lostface Hoagland even have the landing date. And guess what, folks? It's going to land in my front yard right here in Arizona on December the 7th, according to them. That's right. They say north of Phoenix in Arizona, that's my front yard. North of Phoenix in Arizona is my front yard on December the 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. Only this time it's not going to be the United States Navy that gets Pearl Harbored. It's going to be all the lunatics, nuts, wackos, escaped mental patients, ufologists, and otherwise absolutely spaced out people who flock to Arizona to be here on December the 7th to find out that nothing's going to happen except Crusher's going to go out and pee on a bush. That's my Rottweiler. That's all that's going to happen on December the 7th. And he usually does it about, four times a day. And so, that's all they're going to see. And you watch, ladies and gentlemen, this coming meteor shower, which is just coming this week. It is supposed to reach its maximum on the nights of the 16th and 17th of November. I would start watching the skies now, and I'll tell you why. Because I have seen some of the most spectacular, beautiful meteors falling through the atmosphere in the last few days that I've ever seen, and lots of them. So we are already in portions of this shower, and it will build to a tremendous crescendo right around the night of the 16th or the 17th, or maybe even both. Who knows? But it's guaranteed to give us a big show. So I recommend that you begin watching the skies right now. Right now. I mean, if you can see the skies, we're overcast right now here where I am at, and we are expecting ice and snow during the wee morning hours in the night, and after the sun comes up and temperatures start to rise, I'm sure it will turn into rain. But you continue to listen to Art B.S. Bell, and you're going to, if you have a sane mind, if you're not easily snowed, if you can think for yourself, which most of his audience cannot, you will be pleasantly entertained by all of this baloney. All of the people who believe what they're hearing, however, are in for a tremendous, once again, another tremendous disappointment. When nothing happens and no extraterrestrials land anywhere in the state of Arizona or anywhere else in the world on December the 7th. Not going to happen. Will not, absolutely will not happen. And for those of you who have been hearing all of the lies, there are no, absolutely no United Nations troops around Casa Grande in Arizona, or anywhere else in Arizona. There is no buildup of military personnel, troops, or anything else in the state of Arizona. There are no unusual, in fact, there are no movements of military personnel whatsoever in the state of Arizona. There are no preparations being made for any landing of any extraterrestrial starship or any other kind of ship, for that matter, anywhere in the state of Arizona. And folks, I can see an awful lot of the state of Arizona from my mountaintop here. I can look out and see long distances in all directions, 360 degrees, and everything is normal. Everything is normal. So, they're at it again. The number is 520-333-4578, and the phones are open. How many of you people have been listening to this? And what do you think of it? I know that some of you listen to Art Bell every night. I listen every once in a while. I certainly don't listen every night, or not even very often. In fact, I haven't listened in quite a while. I'm following the whole thing on the internet, to tell you the truth. And when I doubt what's being said, I just go to the website and listen to portions of the broadcast. And that's exactly what they're doing. It's just absolutely incredible. So, I thought I'd bring you up to date on that. And it looks like we're getting stomped on really good by Voice of America, because apparently nobody can hear this broadcast because nobody's calling. And when nobody calls this broadcast, it's because they can't hear this broadcast, because we always get the phones ringing off the hook, and a lot of people can never, ever get through to this broadcast when they can actually hear it. Over long periods of time, including sometimes several months. So now that I know that we are not being heard anywhere due to the Voice of America broadcasting on the same frequency after the first hour of our broadcast, I am now going to sign off the air and go about my business with my family. So, Randy Steele or Al Wiener, if you're at WBCQ and you're listening to this, you better get out some records or some tapes or some music or something, because at this time, we're going to do our lead-out music, and we're going to take a hike, because that's what I always do when people can't hear the broadcast. There's no sense in even doing it. And so, here we go. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. Sorry about the Voice of America thing, but there's not a thing I can do about it. You're listening to 98.5 FM Eager.